Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back. This is Scott Aspenlighter filling in for the great Aaron Flint. I appreciate my buddy, Ty and I's friend, Jake Penwell, texted me saying that I'm not quite as good as Aaron, but I'm getting there. Thanks for the encouragement, Jake. I appreciate you listening in. Every friend needs a support system like that to say, hey, you're not that good, but you're improving. So that's super. That's like getting a red ribbon in the race. So thanks to my buddy Jake Penwell on that. Ty is going to stick around for the next half hour and avoid work, and we're going to talk about Billings. And Ty's going to flip the script on me a little bit here, he said, and ask me some questions about what's going on in Billings and my experience. So as we get into the next couple segments, we're going to do a little bit of talking about that. But to wrap up the Bobcat conversation and to kick the hour off right by continuing the Bobcat conversation, Ty, you're going down to Nashville with your wife, Heather. I'm going down to Nashville with my wife, Heather, and a big part of our friend group is going to travel down to Nashville. Do you think this is the time? Do you think this is the one? I've been to the last two that we've lost to North Dakota State, and I really thought last year was the one. Do you think this is the one? Like, give me some positive encouragement here.
Yeah, Scott, I think strongly this is the one, by the way. That's the reason that we're going. But I think you talked about just before we left that the South Dakota loss, I really think that loss was the best loss for them because that team really had no choice but to buckle down and say, we got to win out if we're going to achieve our goals. And I think it just prepared them. When you see the way that they have blown people out in so many games, and how they've overcome, you know, some key injuries, the way they played without Dowler last weekend, it just seems to me like this train is on the right track, and nothing's gonna make it veer.
So let me tell you, just solidifying. Coach Waddup's from MSUB, and you're on the MSUB Foundation, so you're going to appreciate this. I coach a little guy football, peewee football, with Coach Waddup's. His son was on the team. My son was on the team. And you talk about a great coach, like just a professional coach, a professional leader. That dude is awesome, and I'm excited to have him on the show the last half hour. But our little football team made it to the Rocky Bowl, the championship game for fifth grade here in Billings. And I reached out through Steph to the Dowlers, and I asked Steph, I said, hey, do you think Taco and Caden would be willing to send a message, like a video message, to my team before we go play? And you know what? They did.
Yeah.
Both of them
yeah.
sent an individual message talking about how they played in the Rocky Bowl and how some of the friends that they played with are still their teammates today
yeah.
at MSU as they chase after this. And that's that pride, I think, that we have in this team, this Bobcats team. So grateful for the Dowlers to do that. My boys thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Montana Talks.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Welcome back. This is Scott Aspenlighter sitting in for Aaron Flint as Aaron enjoys some time away over the holidays with his family. I appreciate the opportunity and the trust Aaron puts in me to steer the ship while he's away. I love doing this, but I wouldn't love doing it 5 days a week because that is a whole lot. And I got mad respect for Aaron and folks that do these radio shows because holy smokes, it's more than sitting talking into a microphone. That seems like it's easy, even for guys that like to talk like me, half-cock politicians. But it is not as easy as it appears. So, Ty wanted to turn the tables in this situation. So I'm gonna let Ty take a take the driver's seat for a second.
Yes, got my my thoughts there. I do find myself at times jealous, no longer being on the banking side and having the opportunity, you know, to talk to small business owners day in and day out as to what's really driving billings. I'd be interested in, you know, both through your work with the council, your work with your company, Performance Engineering, your time with Matt this morning. What's driving growth in billings today? You know, as you drive through the West End and, more probably the northwest part of Billings, you continue to see new apartment buildings, see land development. I see Performance Engineering signs on darn near every new construction project that's coming up, and there just doesn't seem like there's any slowdown.
Yeah.
Give us a feel from your perspective. What's driving growth in Billings today?
You know, I think it's the same as it always has been. I don't know that it's necessarily functionally or fundamentally changed. You know, when Craig and I started and Ty gave us our first loan, he gave us our business startup loan 14 years ago when he was a president at Yellowstone Bank. And when Craig and I started our company, we came to Billings. And we did that in large part because Billings is the most stable market in the state of Montana. And if you look back at, you know, at the history and the statistics, Billings is steady Eddie. You know, it's got enough momentum that it seems to continue to roll, and I think that maintains true today. What we're seeing in the last 2 years really is a strong push in growth in both retail markets and industrial markets. I mean, much like Matt talked about, there is a lot of support infrastructure now that I think you're starting to see. The hospital and the $1 billion investment nearly that Intermountain and St. V's is making on 27th Street, they're building a consolidated services center, you know, $20 million consolidated services center, 80,000 square foot warehouse to service all of their hospitals in Montana. They're building in Billings. Billings is a central market, so that'll service Miles City, that'll service Butte, and that'll service Missoula. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we're seeing is Billings has gotten to a point now where we used to be serviced from other communities coming, you know, shipping in. And I think we're starting to see those companies actually come here and service out of Billings. So industrial space and industrial investments, I think, is something that continues to grow. It's not the shiny, sexy thing in Billings, but it's that core backbone that doesn't go away.
Yeah, and they provide jobs.
A lot.
I think some of the concerns that we've heard out of the Bozeman market over the last several years is the only new jobs being added is just in the construction industry to help build, you know, all the new housing. But I think we are bringing industry here that provides jobs so that families can grow, buy homes, you know, have good professional wages, that have retirement plans. And I think that is one of the big keys is that our job sector here is diverse. We have healthcare, we have new industries coming in. So I think that's a really good point, Scott, and sometimes lost in that discussion.
Yeah. A lot of these are just core stable support industry businesses. Yeah. The three refineries that we have in Yellowstone County are huge economic drivers. They always have been, and they will continue to be huge economic drivers. You know, the number of businesses that have come into Billings just to support the three refineries, I think, is notable. Mm-hmm. And then you have this whole hospital corridor in the medical complex here. I mean, the number of medical-associated businesses in Billings, I think, would be astonishing if you added them up and you put them on paper for people to look at. Those things are not going away, and I think that's what's helped make Billings so stable. And then, so you build that base, right? And then you have all the people that work in those places. And then all those people need things. They need goods. They need services. And so you end up with businesses like ours. You end up with the retail stuff, you know, the market stuff. we have a growing population base, and I can't remember. I think 150,000 is the projected population by 2030 or 2032, something like that. By the time we go through the next census, in the urban boundary, if we continue to see that kind of growth in Billings, you know, I think that's the momentum that just feeds itself. Mm-hmm. And we don't have, you know, tech industries that ebb and flow with the market. We have real stable businesses here that they're going to be the foundation for growth in our community for a long time. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back. But these are the fun things I love talking about with guys involved in our communities like Ty. What are we seeing and what can we look forward to in Yellowstone County and Billings in the state of Montana? This is Montana Talks.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back. This is Scott Aspenler sitting in for Aaron Flint, and I'm still fortunate to have my friend Ty Elkin, who, with Allied Investment Advisors, decided to stick around for the first half hour of the show and just talk about what's going on in Billings.
You know, Scott, I just as you stepped away during the break, I was thinking of back on our discussion and you know, maybe tying two things together here. You talked about recruiting for your company.
Yep.
And I know that's, you know, that's one of your greater challenges.
Always has been.
And maybe you could share that a little bit with us. But can we also tie in MSU to that too? We talked about MSU football, but let's talk about MSU the institution. Mm-hmm. And what work are they doing from your perspective in that space? Are kids coming out of college prepared and ready to go to work for you? Are they selling those kids? You know, maybe just kind of bring those two pieces, recruiting MSU together, and share some of your experiences.
Sure. So, recruiting and hiring employees is a challenge. I don't care what sector you're in these days. Whether you own a restaurant or a cleaning business, or you know, it's a challenge for all of us to find good people. I mean, you experience it in your business as well. This year was a really, really odd year, in that we recruit at four different colleges. We go to South Dakota School of Mines in Rapid City, South Dakota. We go down to Laramie, to the University of Wyoming, MSU, and then Montana Tech over in Butte. And for the last, I would say, 3 years, it has been an incredible struggle to find civil engineers coming out looking for a job.
Mm-hmm. Is it tough to get them to Billings, or is it just tough to get them? I mean, what is the hardest part of that piece for you?
There just haven't been a lot of them.
Yeah.
Whether they've already had jobs, the ones that do, Billings is a challenge. You know, they go to school in Bozeman. Getting them to come to Billings as opposed to wanting to stay in Bozeman or, you know, go up to Kalispell or whatever, that's always been harder, selling Billings. But what changed this year, and it's something that I've got to dig deeper in, we probably got more resumes from those four colleges this last fall recruiting season than we did for kids looking for full-time jobs with a civil engineering degree than we did for the previous 3 years combined in six recruiting semesters. So one of two things is happening there. People aren't hiring now, or people are, you know, pumping the brakes, you know, being a little more cautious and not as bullish about what's coming down the pipeline, or programs are kicking out more kids. I don't think it's programs that are kicking out more kids. If you look at Montana State's enrollment and just historical numbers in civil engineering, it's about what it was when I went to school back in 2000. Enrollment hasn't really went up. And if you talk regionally in the Northwest region, I was talking to a program director from the Colorado School of Mines. enrollment in civil engineering and construction engineering technology. Those are the only two engineering disciplines that are seeing a decline in enrollment, not an incline, not an increase. And the logical question is why? Those are probably the two most stable jobs. I mean, infrastructure in our country is falling apart. Civil engineering isn't going anywhere. Civil engineers are needed for everything. It's probably the most universally applied engineering degree that you can find. However, in the civil engineering industry, we don't, your earning and your starting pay is the lowest out of all of the engineering disciplines, electrical, mechanical, chemical, you know, take your pick. And so kids are looking at the number and saying, well, I'm going to go for the higher number. What they oftentimes, what I've seen in Montana State is they haven't done a good job of communicating what after college looks like. And this is where I'm highly critical of Montana State University in Bozeman. They drive the numbers up, and the numbers are growing in mechanical engineering and chemical engineering and, you know, computer sciences and all that kind of stuff. Those are all going through the roof. When kids find out that they can't get a job in those industries in Montana, they all of a sudden now in their junior and senior years are going, oh, man, I don't really want to leave. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a Montana kid. I want to stay in Montana. And the opportunities just aren't there for those industries. So we historically have seen a lot of mechanical engineers in particular trying to get jobs in the civil engineering space.
You know, I wish I could. I can't hold that conversation with you at the level that I wish I could, because I don't understand the differences in those. It seems to me, on the civil engineering side, it's you know, certainly, and it may be because of the industries that I've served in over time, but it's the most visible for me where I see impact being made. But that's interesting to hear that the civil side is on the lower end of pay scale. Mm-hmm. Potentially, there's some work that you can, do there, Scott.
We have continued to be working on that. Yeah. But that's also set by the market, right? Yeah. Like, as a business owner, you can only charge what the market will bear. And civil engineering in particular has, you know, kind of commoditized itself over time. We haven't valued the level of expertise in the service that we bring, and we've commoditized ourselves on a pricing basis.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the grocery store and you buy the cheapest version of the pop. And
yeah.
Civil engineering, I think, historically over the last couple of decades has fallen into that trap. Doesn't mean that we need to charge through the roof, but we have fallen into this spiral of, you know, having to keep our prices down because historically that's where our prices have been. And when the business keeps its pricing down, it can't keep up on the wage side of things. And that just trickles all the way down, right? I think the industry is starting to get better at that. We certainly have gotten better at that. I would say that we're in the upper third as it relates to compensation packages and things like that. But that's a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a challenge as a business owner that you have to navigate. Where I think the colleges can do better, and where I would challenge education to do better, is painting the picture of what your career looks like when you get done.
Yeah.
You know, giving some financial literacy to kids. You would be shocked at how many kids will take a job for the same pay to stay in Bozeman with a cost of living that's, you know, 50% more, but they want to stay in Bozeman. Like, how do you explain that to a 22-year-old kid?
Yeah, like, I think there's probably a lack of experience or maturity at that point that they don't recognize that. I would tell you, I'm serving on a CEO executive search committee right now, and had three interviews with folks here over the last couple of weeks, all three of them from out of the area. And when you hear them describe why they're interested in Billings, these are individuals that are in their 40s and 50s, their interest in Billings, it's symmetrical to what you and I spoke of earlier in terms of what we have here that's attractive for people.
Right.
But I think you definitely have a different perspective when you're 40 or 50 years old than you do when you're 22 or 23.
For sure. And, you know, we want people to get out and get life experiences and to make sure that when you come work for us, that we're your home. No business is interested in the revolving door of employees. That's expensive, and it doesn't bring stability to your company. But I think one of the things that Billings has a challenge with is just the perception of Billings. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll use my company as example, but I'm not the exception. I think it's the rule in Billings. When we're trying to pull people into Billings, I think there's a whole lot of misconceptions, and there's some legitimate work that we have to do. What I've never heard anybody say when I've recruited for 20 years, not one person ever, whether I'm hiring a new kid out of college or an experienced guy coming in, never had anybody ask me how our parks and trails system is. Mm-hmm. Not one time ever. But when I'm asking people to come to Billings, it certainly happens that they say, ugh, like, you guys got a lot of crime in Billings. Mm-hmm. And that's something that sticks. That's a stain that we have not yet cleaned off of our community. You know, we have a ton of economic growth and activity, and we got a lot of services. And I think Billings is a community that once you get off the interstate, you're really surprised at what's here. But we don't sell it very well.
Yeah.
And for employers, that's hard.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. You make a good point, Scott, and you know, something that we probably could spend hours right. debating and talking about. And I appreciate your work on the council, and your willingness to be transparent in that area. And I think your professional experiences, and how you can relate them to what's happening at the city level and at council, I think it served you well. Maybe if I could ask you quickly, I don't know how much time we have.
Yeah,
Scott,
we got
a little bit of time.
We had 2 minutes.
We talk about the council. What are the key initiatives at the council level for 2026? What is it that you guys are focused on? If there's like a one and a two.
Mm-hmm. So I think the number one priority and initiative for anybody in this county is going to be public safety. Mm-hmm. Continues to be, and probably key among them is the jail issue that we have here. That's not unknown to anybody. Everybody in this community knows we have a jail capacity issue, and we got to address it. Yeah, the county commissioners are probably going to come out with a $200+ million mill levy at some point, maybe this fall. If we don't pass that as a community, we're going to have a really hard time correcting our crime situation. We just don't have enough beds at the inn.
Yeah.
And we have got to fix that problem. It's going to be expensive. That's the one thing I'm willing to pay for as a taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
We have got to fix our crime issues. And that jail is key in that. And that's the number one thing as we go into next year.
Gotcha. Thanks,
Ty,
for sharing.
I really appreciate you taking the time and spending some time with me in the studio. Go find him at Allied Investment Advisors. But we are going to take a quick break. This is Montana Talks.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
The American Relief Act, passed in late 2024, authorized the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program, and applications for farmers and ranchers are now open. Danny Munch, an economist with the American Farm Bureau, said the program provides relief from natural disasters that occurred in 2023 and 2024.
The first stage of SDRP compensated growers with existing crop insurance or non-insured disaster assistance plans, while the second stage is intended to fill all the remaining gaps for farmers who still haven't received compensation. So that includes uninsured crops, which often includes specialty crops. It includes value loss crops, on-farm storage losses, milk losses, as well as providing some payments for folks who had shallow losses as well as quality losses.
Munch says this program shares some similarities with previous disaster assistance programs, but also some key differences.
This second stage matches WIP Plus much more closely, which had a much more substantial documentation requirement, and there was a lot of variation across crops. There is no progressive factoring like in ERP 2022, which drastically reduced prices farmers received. Each crop and each loss category has its own calculation. That means they're going to be going through quite a lot of calculations to come up with their final number. Given how complex the program is, many FSA offices are far behind in understanding how the calculations work. Really make sure all your usual FSA forms are on file.
Again, for more information, contact your local Farm Service Agency office. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Hi.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana, statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
right, welcome back. This is Scott Aspenleiter sitting in for the great Aaron Flint. Grateful for the opportunity to take over the show for a day. Fortunate this morning to have my last in-studio guest and a good friend and a colleague, Coach Derek Wattups from Montana State University Billings Baseball. Coach, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is an awesome opportunity to work with you and just have a little fun on the air.
Yeah, no. So Derek and I actually coached little guy football together. Hadn't known each other until this season, and had the opportunity to coach with Derek. And that was such a learning experience for me to work with a guy as good as Derek is with kids, the way that he teaches, the way that he coaches, his inspirational message, the way that he leads and leans into those opportunities. It was a great opportunity for me, and I was so grateful for the opportunity to lean. And it's led to us having a whole lot more conversations post football. And so I wanted to bring you on and just talk about, you know, some of the things in the program that you're building here at MSU. In Billings, you had a wonderful season last year, made a good run, had a great team, and now you're hit the reset button and getting ready for next year. So, you know, Coach, what did you kind of learn off of last year's season? That was one of the better seasons Montana State baseball has had ever.
Yep. So one of the biggest things that we try to instill is, you know, and we call it intrinsic motivation, but the ability to compete and to believe in yourself. And, you know, last year our guys just really bought in and created some positive energy and got things going. You know, I said in 2024 I felt we underperformed. You know, and it was really the same group of guys that we brought back, and we just worked a lot on the mental game and doing fundamentals better, whether that's ball in play from an offensive standpoint or just playing catch defensively and even just throwing strikes as pitchers. In 2024, we didn't throw enough strikes. In 2025, the real difference maker was we threw more strikes. We didn't give free passes. And so from a baseball standpoint, that was it. But really just more of an internal belief and some positive energy coming from behind that. That is really what we learned. And we had 17 seniors, so it's a complete turnover. We advanced to an NCAA regional. It's only our second time in school history to be in the postseason and be able to advance and play. We got our first NCAA tournament win last year, tied our school record for wins. So they did a lot of great things. But now I have some younger guys that saw that. And so we do have a ton of transition. You know, and have a lot of new guys that'll have to be the next man up, which is something we preach in our program, is to be prepared to be the next man up. And so it'll be fun to get out and compete again starting, you know, college baseball is crazy. Our first game is January 30th in California. So it's right, right around the corner.
Right. Yeah, you guys are a northern baseball program that starts when we're in the dead of winter up here. And one of the things I think, you know, and I'll speak as a business owner, as a citizen, and as a council member, what you guys do up at that college, especially with collegiate athletics and your program is phenomenal, is bringing activity and bringing knowledge into this community. You are teaching and bringing up and training the next leaders of our community. And that's one of the things I think that, you know, we are so blessed in this community to have you here doing that at MSUB. You're a great leader of men and teaching young men. So as you get into, you know, we can talk about the baseball side of it, but as you get into this next season with this group of guys, you know, what are some of those core fundamentals that you're trying to teach them that, you know, they're baseball specific, but they translate to life outside of that as well?
So the three core values that I try to instill in every young man that I work with, whether that's 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 20-year-old, 25-year-old,
yeah,
right? The core values that I function off are optimism, positive energy, and servant leadership. And the way I teach those, optimism really to me is just a growth mindset. that I know if I work hard and do things, things will work out. I'm going to fail. That's part of the process. That's okay, as long as I learn from it and don't quit trying.
Yeah.
Positive energy. The easiest way I can describe it is I'm either a faucet or a drain, and I either suck the life out of people or I build them up and inspire and elevate those around me.
Yeah.
So I challenge my guys, I challenge myself daily to bring positive energy, to inspire and elevate the people I come in contact with. And that's through, you know, Grid Kid football. It's through youth baseball. It's through youth hockey that I work with here in the community. It's through MSU Billings baseball. You know, we talk about, you know, being a force for good in the community on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And we talk about that with every one of our players and what that looks like. And then a championship characteristic, and this is a life one, this is a baseball one, everything else, is servant leadership. That I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I want to give back. I want to lead through service. I want to be a person that's a great teammate. You know, and when I talk to the 8-year-olds, I tell them the most important thing every day is to have fun. Mm-hmm. But we have to learn to have fun the right way. I can be a gong show, a class clown, and goof off and distract, and I can think that's fun, but it doesn't create long-term happiness, fun, joy.
Yeah.
And so we talk about being a great teammate and giving your best on a daily basis. You know, and there's so many different ways to articulate that, describe it, whether it's, you know, Spencer Larson, when I coach football with him, he has 3 team rules. Be tough, be smart, and do your best.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is what bringing your best is every day. And so that's mentally tough, it's emotionally tough, it's physically tough. Mm-hmm. But I try to take servant leadership to another level instead of it just being a baseball thing. Because, yes, do I need to be willing to sacrifice myself sometimes and move a runner or do different things that way? Sure. But I really want that to be something they carry with them beyond the program. And so it excites me when I have guys years later, you know, send me a scripture about servant leadership from the Bible, or, you know, tell me about some community service project they're doing with, you know, their school or with their business. And I see that, you know, it's kind of the pay it forward mentality.
Yeah.
And so if we do that as a baseball team, guys are going to be in a better space to compete and to be a team on the field. But really, it's more about life and what's happening off the field. So those 3 values, I guess, are what I hang my hat on.
Yeah.
Is optimism, positive energy, and servant leadership. You know, some guys have joked that it's the OPS of our culture and character, which OPS for baseball guys is, you know, on-base percentage plus slugging.
Yeah.
And that's how you score runs.
Yeah.
And I hadn't put that together. That was actually from one of my guys. Like, hey,
sure.
You teach the OPS of life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I like it, you know.
Yeah.
But just trying to get guys to be good humans.
Yeah.
At every level.
And that's one of the things that I've appreciated and loved to learn the most about from you is that concept and that level of teaching and that level of leadership. You don't just coach MSUB baseball. Like, you're involved in youth sports across the spectrum in Billings, whether it be youth baseball, you coach, you know, in the youth baseball leagues around here in the Little League. Like I said, you coach with me and in little guy football. You're also helping out in the hockey development space in Billings. Like, you're involved in all of the sports, and I don't know how you do that, but I can tell you that I understand and respect the sacrifice that you and your family make to be able to do that for all of those that you serve, because that is a tremendous amount of time. I when we were in football, I don't know how many times you went directly from the end of our football practice at 7 to a hockey practice or to watch your daughter in softball, or, you know, I mean, the number of things you were engaged in this fall was mind-blowing to me. And that's a giant sacrifice that I am grateful that you make for our community, for sure.
Well, there's a couple things that go into that. Number one, I have an amazing wife. And she is very supportive of that. And so we have 4 children. And I try to be involved with each one of them and try to help each one of them in their own realm and give them the tools they need to be successful. You know, my daughter played flag football and swims for West High. My son, you know, at Ben Still played football this year. I tried to help out there with Spencer Larson.
Yep.
Then we coached Grid Kid football. You know, I had, you know, Porter that played for us, you know, with Grid Kid football. And then my 9-year-old played softball this fall, and so I helped her. And then she's swimming now. And so I'm very involved. And there's a couple things with that. Our university wants us involved in the community. So it's something that all of our coaches try to do is find ways to impact the community, mm-hmm. whether that's at an elementary school or with youth. You know, Kevin Wooden does a great job with our elementary school basketball game. He brings in a ton of people. But going through it, it's just we try to be a force for good.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Coach Wadups and talk more about what he's got going on up at MSUB and what to expect and some of the excitement that's around his team. Appreciate the opportunity, and we'll be right back with Montana Talks.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back. This is Scott Aspler sitting in for Aaron Flint, and it's our last segment, and one of the things I appreciate about Aaron is he lets me come in and he doesn't give me any boundaries. So when I take over the show, we talk about things that are different than maybe the political spectrum that gets talked about on a regular basis here. And it's why I appreciate the opportunity and the willingness for Coach Wadups to come in and talk about youth sports and how youth sports and his baseball program at MSUB impacts the next generation of leaders that our communities are reliant on. You know, we need our Montana kids and kids from other states that come into Montana to be good humans, to be good leaders, and to understand investing back into our communities. And that's one of the things that, I'm grateful to continue to learn from you. And I'm grateful that you instill in our kids. So when we talk about youth sports, and kind of hit this, and then we'll close out with your baseball program, what do you think are the biggest benefits to these kids participating through youth sports and learning to win, but also learning to lose?
So to me, the biggest benefit of youth sport is, and this has to be modeled by adults. Sometimes we screw it up as adults.
We do.
I'll be honest
with
you.
For sure.
But the number one thing to me is learning to control what you can control. So teams I work with, I don't let them yell at refs. I don't let them do that. We need more refs, number one, so we should treat them kindly so they'll come in so we can play.
Right.
But I really try to teach kids that you can't control what the coach does. You can't control what your teammates do, and you can't control what officials do. So you control your own body language. You control your own mind. You control who you are as an individual. Now be a great teammate. And in every business that I've been a part of, inside and outside of baseball, you have teammates. We mm-hmm. just don't call them that. We call them colleagues. We call them employees. We call them whatever you want. But if I learn to be a great teammate and learn to socially communicate and read cues and control what I can control, and I can bring energy and effort every day, my business, my community, my church group, everything is going to be better from that.
For sure.
And so when I look at youth sports, I think it's a crying shame at like the Division I level when they say these coaches aren't mentors anymore. They're just millionaires.
Yep.
And to me, as a college coach, as a youth coach, as a community member, I should be a mentor. Because I've had life experiences that should help other people grow and develop and learn to be good teammates and good humans. So that's my goal with every team that I coach. When we talk, you can throw a coin phrase on it from servant leadership or optimism mm-hmm. or positive energy. But really what it comes down to is be a good human.
Yeah.
But learn to regulate and control your emotions and learn to help other people. That's what teammates do.
And I can tell you as a business owner, and this is one of the things that's one of the reasons why it's resonated so much to me. When we're out hiring, like I hire three people, three different backgrounds. You're either a farm kid, you're an athlete, or you have done service in the military. One of the three. And all three of those have the very similar concepts that you're talking about in common. They're embedded in you.
Mm-hmm.
You've learned them at a young age. You've got your butt kicked before. You've went through some adversity. You've had to deal with tough times and challenges. You've risen above those things. You've been coached hard. You've been pushed. You've been molded in the fire, so to speak.
So my dad's a retired naval captain, right? I have two brothers that served in the military, in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And my oldest brother, he actually worked for the State Department. And he was working for the State Department when I was getting into coaching. And he was stationed in Washington, D.C. And I told him, sometimes I feel like I'm not giving back enough to the community. And he told me, bro, like, you're the boots on the ground. By coaching and developing and helping mm-hmm. people learn all those things, that's what develops a strong country.
Yeah.
He was at a different level, at a different realm of it. But I agree with you. I think we need to utilize youth sport and collegiate sport to create good citizens in our community.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your baseball team in the last 2 minutes here. You're heading into a new season. You got a whole new group of kids. You got a good crew of Montana kids, too.
We do.
And so tell me about your team going into the season.
Local product, Nate McDonald, will be at third base for us. You know, as a freshman, he kind of split time, played some outfield, played some infield, did some DH. But he'll be a core guy, and he's a Billings kid. We partner a lot with, like, the Billing Legion. Now I'm excited about high school baseball that has a lot of MSUB alums coaching in the community, which is amazing. You know, we returned some really strong guys. Our first baseman, who's been, you know, all region the last 3 years, he's a senior for us, so there's where our leadership core will come from. But a lot of young Montana kids. Espen Fisher's a Montana kid from the western part of the state. That he's going to be a freshman catcher for us. So we have a lot of Montana roots, and then we sprinkle in, you know, other West Coast kids that can help us win games at the collegiate level. But it's exciting time moving forward into the spring. Some big arms on the mound. And you come watch. I mean, you're going to see guys that have pro stuff. Yep. We had three guys, our shortstop, second baseman, and right fielder, signed pro contracts last summer when they were done with us.
That's awesome. I'm excited for this season, and Coach, I'm grateful for your friendship. I'm grateful for your time, and thanks for coming in. We're going to have you on again when I get to host this next year, and we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about servant leadership and some of the stories about your team. Thanks for the time. Thanks for tuning in today. This is Montana Talks. Have a good rest of your day.